From the authentic soul of Bernie Siegel, MD, comes Mind Health Matters, a show that reflects Bernie's passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges, not just the physical ones, so that each person can live life fully with the understanding that, as Bernie reminds us, we only have today. Believing that we are all here to love one another, each in our own unique way, Bernie has crafted eternal truths and the timeless wisdom of the ages. Join Bernie as he shares his powerful journey through life while offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom.
Welcome, everyone, to Mind Health Matters with the Dr. Bernie Siegel, which can be heard Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. If you're tuning in for the first time, we are Boston-based internet station with all the bells and whistles where you can listen wherever you are in the world, whether you're in a car, whether you're home, whether you're with your mobile device. So it doesn't matter. It's just a perfect technology experience. And I would like to put out there that we are the proud media partner for the Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York. So Bernie has an excellent guest for you today, Dr. Janice Mina Holden, who currently serves as the president of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, IANS. And since 2008, she served as editor-in-chief of that association's peer-reviewed scholarly journal of near-death studies. For her outstanding and sustained contributions to scholarly creative activity, teaching, service, she received the UNT Foundation's 2019 Eminent Faculty Award. She continues to collaborate with Dr. Bruce Grayson, who is the leading scholar in the field of near-death studies. And to learn more about her, you can go on her site, Jan Holden, Jan, J-A-N, Holden, H-O-L-D-E-N.com. So Jan, welcome to the show, and over to you, Bernie.
Hi, Jan.
Hey, Bernie, and thank you, Deborah, for that lovely introduction. How are
You're
you today,
welcome.
Bernie?
All right, Jan. Have you written any books or things for people to read if they want to or not?
Well, yes. In 2009, I lead edited the Handbook of Near-Death Experiences,
okay.
30 Years of Investigation. And it's a little bit more of a scholarly approach to near-death experiences, so I don't necessarily recommend it as the very first book for someone to read about near-death experiences, but for someone who wants to dive into the research a little more deeply, it's a great book, and I have other recommendations books.
I've had so many things happen in my lifetime that I'm thinking of writing a book called Life, A Mystical Miracle.
That sounds great.
All the things, and I always say, one of the advantages of not being a normal doctor was all the stories patients would tell me, and they weren't all my patients. I'd get a call saying, well, let me give you one example. This woman had a heart-lung transplant. She called me. She said, Dr. Siegel, I know you're not a normal doctor, so I wonder if you could come up to my room and talk to me and help me, because everybody here thinks I'm crazy. And then I came. She said, when I woke up after surgery and they said, would you like something to eat? I said, yeah, I'll have chicken McNuggets and a beer, please. And then she said, what? I don't eat those things. And what she ultimately had, to make a long story short, was basically a dream in which a young man came to her and said, we're together forever, and told her his name. And she's a little woman, so having his heart and lungs, a big part of her is now him. And the family went through obituaries, found his name, called the family. All the things that had happened to her were true. She had ridden a motorcycle. He died in a motorcycle accident. He loved chicken McNuggets, et cetera, et cetera. And she wrote a book about it called The Change of Heart. But it's how that consciousness goes on. And let me say one more thing, what I think made me different. When I was 4 years old, there were carpenters working in the house and putting nails in their mouth because they didn't have, all those fancy tools then, and they'd take them out, bang, bang. And I'm sitting on my bed, and I had a toy telephone. I took it apart. I unscrewed the dial and put the pieces in my mouth. Then I aspirated them, and I was choking to death. I mean, my larynx went into complete spasm and shut down, and I couldn't breathe, and the pain was incredible, trying to suck in air. And then suddenly I realized, oh, I'm not hurting anymore. I must be okay. And then I noticed, you're not okay. You're up in the air, like near the ceiling, looking down at the body on the bed. And that was the other thing. Whenever I would start talking about it my whole life, I would always talk about the body on the bed or the boy on the bed. I never said me. And that really struck me, that we are not the body. That's like a tool that's given to us, to work with. But anyway, I found, as most kids, fascinating. This is wonderful. I can see, I can think, I'm out of my body. Oh, boy, I prefer being dead, but, oh, I feel bad. My mother's going to come in and see I'm dead. And I realized later what had happened. The body on the bed was lifted up. The waist moved up in the air. And out came all the pieces. And I thought, oh, the kid had a seizure. And he can breathe again. I was vacuumed back into the body. Later I realized, and I know this is true, my angel, whose name is George, did a Heimlich maneuver on the kid because he said you weren't supposed to die at 4 years of age. And George has been my companion for a lifetime, talking to me, and people have seen him. See, that's why you want to get mystical. You know, when near-death experiences first came out, oh, that's crazy, it's something happening in the brain. Well, then it happened to a doctor, and they wrote an article and say it isn't crazy, a book, and it isn't crazy. But I mean, that's why I say it's all such a mystical existence. But I've had so many things happen to me, from past life to near death to everything. And nothing that I was seeking, I mean, things happened to me and these experiences occurred, like choking and so forth. And like most kids, I just will say one more sentence. Because I always laugh when I think about it. When I didn't die, I mean, I took a breath, and then I said, who did that? Because when I was out of my body, I said, oh, my mother will be crying, but I prefer being dead. This is interesting. And then, then I don't die, and I yelled, who did that? And I had a concept, whether you call it God or not, but that there's something else in charge, like my angel showed up. He's been with me. He was, for my whole lifetime. But I didn't meet him till I was older, and in a meditation he showed up. But again, people have seen him standing next to me when I've been out lecturing and giving talks. So I know who he is and what he is. But what got you into IANS? I mean, have you had a near death, or, what sort of sucked you into this?
Yeah, well, I have not had a near death experience per se, but I have had mystical experiences of communion with a being of light, and that happened in really desperate times in my life. I wasn't physically near death, but I was, I guess you could kind of say, psychologically in a dying process. And but that all happened after I got into the study of NDEs, and I can't point to any one thing, but one thing that was, I was always interested in phenomena that couldn't be explained. And so I remember in high school reading about Edgar Cayce, the sleeping prophet who did distance diagnosis of people with medical illnesses, and other kinds of books like that. And then when I was in college, my father read a book called The Great Soul Trial. And it's the story of a reclusive miner who disappeared one day, and when they opened his safe deposit box, they found several $100,000. This is back in the late 1960s, with a handwritten note saying he wanted the money used for research on the survival of the human soul after death. So the state of Arizona put out a little notice in the newspaper thinking nobody would notice it, and over 100 appellants came to try to get the money and do research on the survival of the human soul. So the state of Arizona actually put on a trial where they heard these people testify before a judge how they would use the money if they got it. And eventually, there's a longer story, but I don't want to take the time to tell the whole story. But eventually, the American Society for Psychical Research and the Psychical Research Foundation paired up and got the money. And from that came what's still some of the most convincing research about astral projection, where, I'll think of his name in a second, did this research with a person who was adept at leaving his body, and they would plant visual things in distant rooms, mm-hmm. and this guy would leave his body and then come back and report what he saw. So it was, a really interesting book. I got to read word-for-word testimony from research directors of the American Society for Psychical Research, the Psychical Research Foundation, and I think it planted a seed so that when Raymond Moody's book, Life After Life, came out in 1975, which is the book in which the phenomenon of near-death experience really came to public awareness, and he actually coined that term in that book. I read the book in 1978, and then about 7 years later, I was working on my doctoral dissertation, and this is where I think this was kind of a God thing, that I tried 4 different projects for my doctoral dissertation, none of which had to do with near-death experiences, and each of them aborted at one point or another, and then I'd have to go on and try something else. And finally, I tried something related to near-death experiences, and that's the one that went through, and I ended up with my doctoral degree from that research. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people, when they do dissertation research, after they get their degree, they never want to see that subject again. They're sick of it because you have to be so grueling in the research process. But I was absolutely hooked. I just, excuse me. Yeah, I was absolutely hooked. I just was fascinated by the subject. And one of the perks of being a member of the International Association for Near-Death Studies is that you receive the monthly NDE in your mailbox, and one of our volunteers goes through the archives and finds an NDE of particular interest and sends it out to everybody. And even now, after I've been researching NDEs for over 30 years, and I've heard and talked with and read, you know, probably more than 1,000 NDEs, when that thing arrives in my mailbox, I almost always drop everything and read it. Yeah. I'm still fascinated to hear people's experiences on the brink of death. So that's a thumbnail of how I got into the research of this phenomenon.
Well, one of the things, I didn't know you had that kind of thing, but one day in the operating room years ago, the patient's heart stopped, and the anesthesiologist said, you know, I've tried everything I can. I'm going to call for a stretcher to take him to the morgue. So I yelled out loud in the operating room, being the crazy person I am, Johnny, it's not your time yet. Come on back. And his heart started beating again.
Wow.
And the anesthesiologist looked at me, and I never forget him saying, wow, I like working with you. You know, I did crazy things because everybody said
out
I was
of
crazy,
your knowledge
what do I got
from
to lose? Yeah, and he recovered completely. That fellow.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and you're making a really good point that I think it's such a blessing that you had that experience as a young child, because as a physician, it's informed so much of what you do, and you've been able to do things that most physicians wouldn't know to do because they don't have the knowledge that you have.
Yeah, that's why, you know, as I said, I realized when one of the patients said to me, I know you're not a normal doctor, so I can talk to you.
Yeah.
That opened it up, because I realized, why are the patients treating me this way, talking to me, and they don't talk to the nurses and the other doctors? Because the nurses would say, your patients are a problem. Why? You know, they refused pain medication, and, you know, they had all kinds of stories. And I said, they're not refusing, they don't need it. And they'd look at me like, you're crazy. How can you not need it? But, yeah, I talked to everybody. Well, the thing I learned also was that, you know, whether you're near death or anesthetized or sleeping or under drugs, you hear people.
Yeah.
And so I always talk to people in all kinds of states. And some of them would, you know, immediately come back when I told them. Other times when they'd wake up, they would talk to me about what I had said to them.
Yeah.
And all these stories, but one patient woke up and said, the end of your joke. And the anesthesiologist said, what are you talking about? She said, you told a joke and I didn't hear the end of it. Now, this was an anesthesiologist who was criticizing me for, you know, what's the point of talking to people that are anesthetized? You know, they can't hear you. And here this woman wakes up and says, I didn't hear the end of the joke. And that's what changed them, you know, that the experience of the people and saying something like that. So it was obvious. And I may add one more thing, that one of my patients was a mystic. And she came in one day to my office and said, I know you're not a normal doctor. So I was sitting with some other mystics. I said, let's get a Dr. Siegel. And she said, the message was from Frank, if I'd known it was this easy, I'd have bought the package a long time ago and not have resisted so much. And I knew who that was. It was a doctor named Frank who died, and I called his wife, and she shrieked and said, oh, my God, that's what he used to say when he left your meeting. So, you know, and I've had many calls from the mystics since then.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're referring to a phenomenon that in the research domain we call veridical perception, which is that the person during the near-death experience perceives something that they later report, and it's something that they couldn't have known physically, they couldn't have deduced from, you know, rationally, but it's later confirmed to be accurate. And I think there's a book called The Self Does Not Die that compiles over 100 of these cases. And usually the credible third party who confirms the story is, like you, a physician who was attending to the patient at the time that the experience occurred. And I think more than anything, those experiences are convincing to people that near-death experiences are not just the imagination of the mind. They're not like dreams or hallucinations. They're real experiences.
I mean, there are so many things. I've had a past life experience. Again, not looking for it, but somebody said to me over the phone, why are you living this life? Because I was so busy. And I went into a trance. And then on a plane, alone, without my wife with me for a 3-hour flight, I went into a trance again and saw this whole thing. And to make a long story short, I killed with a sword, and I felt that's why I'm a surgeon now, helping people with a knife. But I knew many aspects of my life that were affected by that past life. And I think these are things that are existing in all of us. And the more we know about it, the more we understand ourselves and, I'd say, can be more well-adjusted to who we are and the life we're living and everything else.
Mm-hmm. And it can so powerfully influence the choices we make. I know in near-death experiences, a substantial minority of people have a life review in which they review and re-experience usually every moment of their life. And So they review and re-experience usually every moment of their life and experience being every person with whom they interacted. So this isn't like empathy. It's like actually being the other person and experiencing how my actions affected them. And so more than anything else, that experience affects people afterwards to know that whenever I'm deciding how I'm going to respond to somebody, I'm going to experience one day what it is to be on the receiving end of my actions, and that can very much influence the choices I make. And I can say that even though I haven't had a near-death experience myself, that affects my choices sometimes. When if I have the impulse to lash out at somebody, I won't say always, but often curb myself and think, you know, how can I respond in a loving way to this person rather than, you know, an aggressive, hurtful way? And so so it can really be very, very impactful for people afterwards.
Well, let me tell you.
Absolutely.
I can tell you
hold
what
that
can
thought,
do.
Bernie, because we need to take our first break.
All
it's
right.
Also very fascinating. So we'll be back in a moment with Dr. Bernie Siegel, Mind Health Matters, and Dr. Janice Minor Holden.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom weaved through his delightful stories. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Why are we here? How can we be happy? Questions asked from millennials to boomers. Crappy to Happy, Sacred Stories of Transformational Joy answers them using true stories of grit, grace, and love. James Redfield, author of The Celestine Prophecy, wrote in the foreword, "This book is a seminar about emerging truths and offers grounded solutions through the art of the comeback." Dr. Bernie Siegel, a contributing author, wrote, "Bodies die, but spirits and consciousness survive and recycle." So, grab some tissues, open your book, and prepare to cry and laugh till it heals. Crappy to Happy by Reverend Ariel Patricia and Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. Available from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and booksellers worldwide.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, Daily Messages of Inspiration, Hope, and Love, and Faith, Hope, and Healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful, loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent. To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles. Looking for a fun and relaxing getaway? Omega Rest and Rejuvenation Retreats are a great way to unwind and renew your spirit. Sit and read in the garden, explore the woodland trails, or try a daily yoga or meditation class. You can stretch your body, quiet your mind, and do as much or as little as you choose. Located in Rhinebeck, New York, just 90 miles north of New York City, Omega's natural environment and quiet pace allow for extraordinary experiences to unfold. Learn more at eomega.org.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back. You're listening to Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. And as mentioned, you can hear his show every Thursday and Friday at 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. And his guest today is Dr. Jan Holden of IONS, which is the near-death studies that has been around since 1981. It's a nonprofit, and you can go on that site, it's IANDS.org, and sign up and receive what Jan was mentioning, that you receive a near-death experience from someone out there in the world, and that can set your day too. One of the things I want to ask Jan is there are a couple of different NDEs, aren't there? There's some people that are close to death, they're not having a near-death experience, and yet it falls under the category of NDEs?
That's right. Well, what we know now from, you know, more than 40 years of research is that NDEs actually occur to people not only who are clinically dead, but and also people who anticipate death but don't actually even get injured. For example, in falls, in mountain climbing, people will report while they fell, they had a near-death experience, but then when they landed, they ended up not being injured at all. So they weren't actually physically close to death. But also, they occur in other kinds of circumstances, usually some kind of extreme circumstance, and it might be the extreme emotion of rage. I heard a man who was having this violent argument with his girlfriend. He was just consumed with jealousy, and suddenly he popped out of his body and had this kind of near-death experience, communication with a spirit guide and that sort of thing. And when he returned to his body, he finished the sentence that he had been, like he hadn't skipped a beat in earthly time, but he had had an experience that had felt like maybe lasted a half hour in spiritual time. And he just completely changed how he was relating to her. And it just completely transformed him. And so he wasn't even in the threat of death, but people can also have them in the extreme circumstance of relaxation that comes with meditation. People sometimes have spontaneous, quote-unquote, near-death experiences. So actually, it's a term. It might make sense in that probably the most reliable trigger for the experience is being close to death or the threat of death, but it can occur under just a variety of extreme circumstances. The extreme of grief, people sometimes have the experience. So, yeah, so it can, there's been some research out of Europe showing that phenomenologically, meaning in terms of the quality of the experience, there's no difference between experiences that occurred during clinical death and those that occurred under extreme circumstances completely unrelated to physical death. So we are talking about the same phenomenon that just occurs under these different usually extreme circumstances.
And let me say that what I noticed hearing my angel were when I was in a trance-like state, mostly exercising, doing something repetitive, let me put it that way. So if I was taking a walk, jogging, riding a bike, then I'd hear a voice. And it always had significant things to say to me or to tell me to ask a question of somebody or something. I'm not going to get into all the details, but on the day
providing guidance.
father chose to die. He was tired of his body, and he said, I need to get out of here. And that morning, a voice said to me, how did your parents meet? I said, I don't know. And the voice said, ask your mother when you get to the hospital. And I walked in, and the voice takes over. That's George. I didn't, you know, I wanted to walk in, hug everybody, say I love you. Instead, I stand there saying, how did you two meet? And I was going to apologize, but to make a long story short, my father lost a coin toss and had to take my mother out. And my father died laughing because of that, you know, because my mother started telling stories. And every one of them was silly and funny. And, I mean, everybody in the room was laughing, including my father, who looked so healthy. I thought he's going to change his mind and die next week. But those are, you know, things I can't know, and yet the voice brings them to me.
Yeah, that's wonderful. What a fantastic resource to have. And, you know, you're talking about that what seems to facilitate it is some kind of repetitive activity. And there is this counseling technique that I just completed a study about called induced after-death communication to facilitate people who are grieving to have an experience of direct communication with the deceased loved one. And in short, the research showed that this technique is more significantly more effective in reducing grief symptoms than traditional talk therapy. Well, the mechanism for the technique is something called bilateral stimulation, which means rhythmically stimulating the right and left side of the body over and over. And you can do it by tapping or by following somebody's fingers as they move right and left in front of your eyes. But it would also be through some kind of rhythmic repetitive activity like cycling and that sort of thing. And something about that bilateral stimulation seems to even, I'm kind of speculating here, but it seems to even out, you know, usually we're in our culture, we're left brain dominant. Some people are right brain dominant, but almost everybody has a dominant hemisphere of their brain. This activity seems to kind of even that out, which seems to open us to information from a spiritual domain. And so I'm not surprised to hear that you find that you have more access when you're involved in some kind of rhythmic activity like that.
Yeah. Get into another state. The voice comes through. And I never, you know, it's happened to me for so many years. I always thought, oh, it's God talking to me. And you want to, one of the most fascinating, I was singing as I was running. Now, the lyrics to the song is, I am weak, but thou art strong. You know, keep me, Jesus, for I'm all wrong. I was singing, I am strong, but thou art weak. See? And I heard a voice say, you have the lyrics wrong. And I stopped to think about what I was singing. But then the voice said, but on the other hand, I've done such a good job with you. Never mind. Go ahead. Keep singing. And I really felt like God, you know, has a sense of humor and was really being nice to me and proud of me.
Yeah.
And I don't go around telling everybody all these things have happened to me because I know they all think I'm nuts. But interestingly enough, because of my patients feeling safe talking at the hospital, first it was a negative statement. Oh, that's one of Siegel's crazy patients.
Yeah.
After a while, they realized, but his crazy patients are doing so well. So it became a compliment to be called Siegel's crazy patient. Because, again, when you talk about communicating with your body, it's like these people were separating from their bodies. They didn't have side effects to treatment. Chemotherapy, radiation, surgery, no pain, no side effects. In the beginning, the doctors thought they had screwed up. The machine is broken. Mm. The nurse didn't put in the chemotherapy. And nurses would say to me, your patients are refusing pain medication after surgery. Mm. And I'd say, never occur to you, they don't hurt. And they look at me like, what are you, crazy? But again, it was like they were out of their bodies. I mean, to quote one woman, I get out of the way, let it go to my tumor. So, again, like they left their body and didn't have any problems.
Yeah, and somehow it even changed the relationship with their body after they returned.
Oh, yeah.
So,
More reverence for the body.
You know, let me just say this, because I do a lot of work with drawings. And you could say to somebody, draw your treatment. Say, yourself getting treatment. And literally, some people would draw the devil giving me poison, and they'd have every side effect in the book. And then others drew God as the source, and this beautiful flow of yellow, you know, light coming in a tube into their body, and they'd have no side effects.
Yeah.
And I keep saying to people, it's no different whether you're talking about the COVID vaccine or chemotherapy. You know, your attitude, your mind, all these things are important to, you know, bring them together in a healthy way. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And Deborah, did you want to say something?
No, I was just saying, when you mentioned about how someone looks or feels about their body when they have I call them little awakenings. That's one of the things that I think the human doesn't realize, the magical functioning of one's body and having reverence for your own body. That's all.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have more stories to tell you.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Polio as a child. So her body had deformity due to muscle wasting, and she was developed a neurological disease and was dying, she was told. So she said, I don't want to die not liking my body. I've never liked my body. And she started lying naked in front of a mirror to love her body before she died. And these were her words. I did it inch by inch. I started on all my toes. Then I'd go up another inch or two, and she went into complete remission and didn't die, loving her body.
Wow.
And she wasn't doing it to get well, you know what I mean?
Right.
It because she felt it was such a terrible thing her whole life to not like her body.
Wow. And that is very cool.
I'm always telling people, pump out the love. Yeah. I fill my heart with love and pump it out.
Yes. Well, we're up on a break again, our last break, so everyone stay with us. To get in touch with Jan, go on her site. It's Jan Holden, HOLDEN.com, and check out and sign up for IANS, and it's IANS.org, and it's IANDS.org. And to connect with Bernie, you can go right on his site. It's Bernie Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L, MD, all one word, BernieSiegelMD.com. You can see all his articles, his books, everything that he's doing. And so we will be back in a moment. Don't go away.
Join Dr. Bernie Siegel on Mind Health Matters every Thursday and Friday, 12 a.m. and 12 p.m. Eastern Time on syndicated Dream Vision 7 radio network. Bernie will draw from his inspirational personal journey, offering us special nuggets of his sacred wisdom weaved through his delightful stories. Listen in as Bernie reminds us to be fully engaged in life.
Dr. Bernie Siegel's writings and the 12 books he's published so far reflect his passion to reach people struggling with all of life's challenges. His latest, A Book of Miracles, inspiring true stories of healing, gratitude, and love, is both riveting and belief-expanding. Bernie has produced wonderful resources for everyone, like 365 Prescriptions for the Soul, daily messages of inspiration, hope, and love, and faith, hope, and healing. Bernie's books also include those like Love, Magic, and Mud Pies, a great resource for parents, and delightful loving stories like Buddy's Candle to help children of all ages cope with the loss of a loved one, be it a pet or a parent.
To purchase Bernie's books, CDs, or DVDs, go to BernieSiegelMD.com. And while you're there, empower the mind, body, and spirit with Bernie's heartwarming articles.
Are miracles real? Can you move from mayhem to miracles? 30 prominent authors say yes as they share their high fives and down lows of challenges, abuse, addiction, and love. Experience hope, the magic elixir of miracles, through the personal stories of New York Times bestselling authors James Redfield, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Sister Jenna, Reverend Temple Hayes, and many more. If you like bestsellers, chaos to clarity, and crappy to happy, you'll love crying and laughing through Mayhem to Miracles. Sacred Stories of Transformational Hope, available now on Amazon and in bookstores worldwide.
During a time when the veil between worlds is thinnest, join expert mediums to make contact with angels, departed loved ones, and your highest self. Guided by experts in mediumship, clairvoyance, and spirit guide communication, discover how to harness the wisdom from the other side. Mention discount code DREAM for 20% off when you register for the Wisdom Beyond the Veil at Omega Institute in Rhinebeck, New York, October 29th to the 31st. Learn more at eomega.org.
Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.
And we are back, and we are discussing near-death experiences and all good things around the body and the mind and the brain and all that we are. I just, as you get older, I think, and maybe Bernie and Jen can address this, you become more in tune with your body, and you are really thankful for what you put into it, for what it does, all those good things. So over to you, Bernie.
All right. I'm thinking of so many things I can't even remember now while I'm listening. But it's, what shall I say? I have gotten involved with IANs and their nightly meetings and talking and sharing. But one of the things that interested me is how similar people's stories are using the word heaven, like when they get to heaven, that there are different classes and levels and grades. And, I used to think, oh, this is crazy. What are you talking about? But then when you hear many people say the same crazy thing, it was like, how can I deny it? They're all having that same experience. And what would you share about that? Because one of the things I think about, if I'm a mass murderer and I die and I get to heaven, where are they going to put me? You can say, they'll put you in hell, whatever, But what if they just put me in kindergarten and say, you got to go to school and learn how to be a good human being? Whereas, somebody else comes along, a Mother Teresa, where did they put her? So what would you say?
Well, I agree with you that there is similarity in what NDEers say. And also that there is a little bit of this phenomenon of the blind men and the elephant, where this is a story from India. It's a
symbolic
story.
Yeah, when they feel it, they all have different, the feeling.
Yeah, they're all feeling different parts of the elephant.
Body, right.
And coming up with, it's this, no, it's that, no, it's that. And then a boy comes along who is sighted and says, it's an elephant, and you're touching the trunk, and you're touching the tail. So there is a little bit of a process of putting things together. But interestingly, just a couple of months ago, the monthly NDE was a man who had an extended a tour of heaven with his spirit guide. And his spirit guide was something like the fifth level, and said that there were two more levels above him that he knew of but had not reached yet. And toured this NDE or through the lower levels and said that essentially the first two levels are much closer to Earth and consisting of people who are very earthbound and egoically bound and, you know, still very self-centered, and that as people evolve spiritually, then whenever they pass, they move to a higher level.
Right.
And so, yeah, so there does seem to be some, and this corresponds to some models that come out of some Eastern religions that came out of years of meditation on consciousness and its existence after death. So there may very well be those levels.
Mm-hmm.
And they all seem to be related to how loving the person has become, how unified with other entities and aspects of the universe and that sort of thing. So it has to do with relative selflessness and love, which is, in my view, the intention for the well-being of the object of love. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I feel that when I keep listening to people telling the same thing, then it's got to be, you know, as crazy
yeah,
as it
exactly.
may sound when I hear the first person say it. But by the time the fourth or fifth person says the same thing,
yeah,
my wife
exactly.
died about 4 years ago, and she, you know, communicated with me and still does regularly. And the other thing that was fascinating, this happened a couple of months ago. My cell phone disappeared. You know, you could call it, you didn't hear it ringing, and one of our sons who went through the whole house and. He said, I don't know, I'm going home. You know, I can't find it. Mm. 5 minutes later, he was at the door. He said, I heard Mom's voice tell me where the phone is.
Oh.
He went up to an area, a wooded area that's not far from the house, but on this old chair that was sitting out there that we never use, there was the phone.
Oh, my gosh.
And,
oh, my gosh. Had you been out there?
No. I mean, there's no reason for it to be there.
You know? For heaven's sake.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because
That's
I used
amazing.
It Friday night and Saturday morning. I couldn't find it. It's like, where did it go? You know,
it had somehow
it was
transported out
magical.
There.
Magical. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
almost like she orchestrated this to remind you that she's still here and involved in your life. And
well, numbers, I don't know if you've heard this from other people, but numbers have been the key. My wife was born 9/9, and so the number 9, and the day we were married is 11. So I found dimes and a penny everywhere, in absurd places, bird baths, on the mattress, underneath everything. And she also kissed me goodnight for weeks. And when I say that, it was a breeze. I would hear a sound. I mean, the first night it happened, I'm lying in bed. I hear, like you're blowing out a candle. And I felt the breeze on my face. And that went on for a couple of weeks. And when I went to the hospital 9 months, because my heart had problems, you know, my wife died. My love. My wristband, and I'll limit what I'm going to go into with numbers. But she was born 9/9. I walk in the emergency room, put him in room 9. We don't have a hospital room for you. Next day, we got it, 8/19. And my wristband was 8, which is a new beginning number, symbolically, 996633. So everything keeps adding up to 9. And, you know, it's communication.
Wow.
You know?
Wow.
I mean, always say, that's no coincidence.
That's right. It's a synchronicity, not a coincidence. And the difference
the other,
meaning that
years ago, one of the grandchildren, when my mother died, I started finding pennies. And I thought, wow, this is weird. You know, what's going on? And when I say finding them, it's like I'd go to the mailbox and find them on the way back. They weren't there on the way down.
Huh.
And so one day we were being visited by the family. I said, it must be, you know, my mother leaving pennies. And this little pipsqueak of a grandchild said, oh, yeah, they're pennies from heaven. Now, what would make that little kid say that, you know? But I thought, it's got to be. So that's why the mystical aspects of, well, they're not mystical. They're part of God's creation, you know, how we're together. But
Absolutely. And just a reminder.
Creation, and you can't explain death either.
But they serve as great reminders that there is so much more going on beneath the surface of just the material level of our existence.
I mean, there's, you know... There's
well, I'd like to say a few words about the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and I'm glad to hear that you've gotten involved in it, Bernie.
Oh, yes.
Our mission is to advance global understanding of near-death and related experiences, and the related experiences include some of the things we've talked about today, like after-death communication and spontaneous healing, mystical experiences of communion with a being of light, communication with spirit guides, and all of which occur during near-death experiences. So they're all kind of legitimate focuses of our activities. And we're trying to advance understanding of these experiences through research, education, and support. And so, as Deborah said, we have a scholarly journal of near-death studies, and we publish books such as The Self Does Not Die, and for our research mission. And then for education, we hold an annual conference, usually at Labor Day in the fall that weekend, we have a lot of educational materials on our website. We hold a spring symposium. In fact, the spring symposium this year, which was April 30th, was about healthcare providers and near-death experiences and how to help healthcare providers not do harm and instead be helpful to people who've had these kinds of experiences in their medical processes.
Yeah, well, let me interrupt you for a minute, because I learned that, well, Jung said it 100 years ago, the doctor treats a diagnosis, but it doesn't help the patient, for the key thing is the story. So I learned to say to people, what are you experiencing? And then we treat whatever in their life fits that word. If you said pressure, what's the pressure? I mean, it turned out to be her marriage. Failure wasn't my body failed me. It was my parents committed suicide when I was a child. So I was a failure. And in the drawings, too, you'll see numbers show up. And you say, why is that number there? And they will all, especially if they draw a clock, it's almost always that year of their life. And they look at you. See, because I, like you're talking and I'm talking, but I have magazines about the controversial Dr. Siegel here. Because when I talked about these things 20 and 30 and 40 years ago, you're insane. What are you talking about? You're crazy. And so I just, but I knew I wasn't crazy because the patients share things with me. So I knew it was real. And let me tell you one term, and you talk about the self-healing. Solzhenitsyn, in his book Cancer Ward, uses a beautiful symbol. See, doctors, you get well when you're not supposed to. Oh, you had a spontaneous remission. Lucky you. Hey, stupid, why don't you say, how come you didn't die when you were supposed to and learn something?
Right.
And I did. And Solzhenitsyn said it beautifully. I'll shorten it down. He said, one of the men finds a book and says, oh, it says here there are cases of self-induced healing. Not recovery through treatment, but healing. And it was as though a rainbow colored butterfly flooded out of the great open book.
Hmm.
Boom. That's it. You
wow.
bust out of the cocoon. You spread
yeah.
your wings.
And transform.
And harmony. The mm-hmm. color, the rainbow, is harmony.
Mm-hmm.
So when
yeah.
you bring that harmony, you know, create your true life, not the one where your parents or somebody else put you in a cocoon, in a trap, but you bust out, start your life, harmony, and you don't die when you're supposed to. And that's
mm-hmm.
what I began to learn. I mean, a lot of times it was humorous. When you think somebody's dead and they show up in the office and you say, why didn't you come back? What's the point? All the doctors were telling me terrible things. I never would, but other doctors. And I said, but why are you here now? I have a hernia. in my landscape business. That was a landscaper who said, I'm not going to have any more treatment. Just go home, make the world beautiful. And thank God we operated in springtime because I think that saved his life. And he became my therapist because of how beautiful life was, nature was. You know, I have to say, I think that's when we connect with God. There's a word called hispodidus. I'm always saying it to people. H-I-S-B-O-D-E-D-U-S. And it's taking a walk in nature and connecting with our Creator.
That's a beautiful way to end the show, Bernie and Jan.
Well, I think it's like the near-death experience. It's taking that special walk.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, thank you, both of you, for your wisdom and the show. And for everyone out there listening, share it with your friends and family. And check out IONS and have something, you know, lift your day. So, everyone, bye for now.
Join us next time on Mind Health Matters with Dr. Bernie Siegel. Until then, remember, be fully engaged in life, loving every moment as your unique self. In going deep within to discover ourselves, we can also discover self-love. Then, when we let our hearts make up our minds, we connect what our bodies do so well to the power of love. We can boost our ability to grow and heal along with our self-esteem. The sense of empowerment that results from this mind-body connection is one related to self-induced healing. When you add spirit to that connection, making a mind-body-spirit connection, you nourish your soul. For more insight, go to BernieSiegelMD.com.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.